So this evening we have a wonderful pleasure of an interview with a visiting guest performer and conductor that's working with our local Eugene Symphony this week for one performance, actually, on Thursday of the Red Violin here at the Holt Center. And Tito Munoz is the director of the Phoenix Symphony in Arizona and visiting Eugene for this kind of special spotlight. Tito, welcome to the Ahora Sí program.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
And so tell us a little bit about yourself, how you grew up, what role music played in your life, how you discovered the love of being a musician, and how you managed to take that into being a conductor.
Sure. I grew up in New York City. I am only child from a single mom. My mother is Ecuadorian. She was born in Ecuador. So music was actually never a big part of my life from the beginning. I fell into it a little bit. I did violin in middle school. As a young musician, I just was intrigued by the instrument. A teacher was coming through our recorder class. You know, everyone takes the little recorder intro to music kind of class. And our the violin teacher, the strings teacher, was coming through the classes trying to recruit for his class. And so I signed up for the violin, and I totally fell in love with it. And living in New York City is a really special thing because there's so many opportunities that you don't realize, and it's one of those things that you don't realize until you leave. So I was immersed in music right away, not really understanding what it was. So I not only did it in middle school, but then my teacher recommended me to a program at the Juilliard School in Manhattan. And so I went there on Saturdays, and then eventually when I finished middle school, I went to a specialized high school, which is a performing arts school. And those of you who might know the movie Fame, or the TV show, or the Broadway musical, or et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's about Performing Arts High School in New York City, which is this high school that I went to. So it's a really, really special place where, again, I was immersed in culture, immersed in music. The school itself is on the Lincoln Center campus in New York, and so is Juilliard. So I was spending almost all week just studying and living in that wonderful environment. So music really became the center point in my life throughout that time. So eventually it kind of was inevitable that I was going to stay with music. Conducting, on the other hand, came, I think, more with my type A personality, my sort of leadership tendencies. I definitely wanted to be the leader in my sections. I wanted to be the leader in orchestra, the, you know, concertmaster is the first chair violin. And not only because I wanted to be the best, I wanted, I was motivated to practice, but I also just had ideas, had a vision of what I wanted things to sound like, and you can't really do that from the back. So I always strived for getting to the front so I could do that. And eventually, I was very intrigued by what the conductor did, the conductor's role during rehearsals, what they could hear, the different sections. And it kind of challenged me sitting in my chair to listen harder, to listen better and hear what was going on. And so eventually I created some opportunities for myself in high school to conduct. I put together friends of mine to do little ensembles. And when I was teaching summer camp, I was teaching some, music camp over the summer. I put together a little like faculty counselor orchestra to conduct. And I continued that in college. I majored in violin in college. But it was during that time in college that I went to a prestigious music festival over the summer, the Aspen Music Festival, which had a really great conducting program. And so I went there, and that was really where the sort of the conducting part of my life took off, because that was such a prestigious place, and it opened a lot of doors, and the conducting opportunities came very, very, very fast. So right out of college, I got my first job with the Cincinnati Symphony as assistant conductor, and it was my first time moving away from New York and moving away from that kind of immersive cultural experience and going to Midwest city that is still a big city, but it's much smaller than New York City, and certainly has a lot less offerings. And so it was when I did that was when I really realized how lucky I was to have had all that I had in New York. So that was a really great a great eye-opening experience for me. And since then, it's been kind of an upward trajectory with a lot of really wonderful positions, a lot of traveling and conducting all over the world, very, very famous orchestras. And here I am in Eugene for a second time. I was actually here once before 10 years ago. So it's really nice to be back and to visit the orchestra again.
Well, welcome back.
Thanks.
And we were talking a little bit as well for those of our generation, you know, a lot of us think of, you know, the classic Looney Tunes when we think of classical music, of just seeing that it was part of more aspects of our daily life. And how do you see younger generations or just even our general community relating to classical music, going to see the symphony? What are some things that you see as maybe losses and gains?
Well, what's interesting is that I think there are a couple of things. One is this, the misconception or the misappropriation of the term classical music and how it's used. Because I think when, you know, we hear about, you know, classical music dying off, we hear about, you know, orchestras not doing well and not, you know, keeping audiences. I think it's really, really important to take the music from the venue and the avenue in which it's consumed. I think nowadays, actually, most people are touched by quote-unquote classical music in their daily lives. I mean, I think that line is, or that definition is really blurred nowadays. Orchestras offer a certain specific experience. They offer a very unique experience. I mean, when else do you hear, you know, 100+ people on a stage making a huge sound the way they do? It's nowhere. And a lot of people don't have that experience to hear that. And so that in itself is very unique. The music that orchestras play is also extremely wide. There's a wide array and it's very diverse. I think when we think of symphony orchestra, we think of a very narrow, you know, group of composers, a narrow kind of genre of even within classical music. But orchestras play a wide variety of music, like the concert that we're doing on Thursday, which I'll talk about in a second. So there's that. There's the avenue, the venue. Because I think, you know, you hear classical music in movies, you hear classical music on television, maybe not as much nowadays, but a lot of movies nowadays are utilizing full symphony orchestras, and the soundtracks are being written by legitimate trained composers. And we're seeing a sort of a cult embrace over some of the special concerts that orchestras are doing nowadays. Just yesterday, the Eugene Symphony played Star Wars, the entire film, with the Eugene Symphony playing the soundtrack live while the film was going. And I think a lot of people probably already know that happened, you know, that there was an orchestra that played that soundtrack. But I think there are a lot of other movies that people probably don't realize are played by full symphony orchestras and have very, very, very good scores written for them. I think because of that, new kind of way of experiencing music and experiencing live symphonic music, I think that's helping our cause in a lot of ways. I think there are a lot of more young people attracted to coming to the symphony because of these concerts. Video game music has become that way as well. Over the past 15 to 20 years, you've been seeing a lot more symphonic soundtracks for video games, as the video games themselves have become more advanced and been able to actually feature that kind of level of sophistication. And so all of that has really, really helped the cause. And so I'm optimistic, frankly, about, you know, sort of the future of orchestras because of these things. Because we've been fighting characterization of classical music that actually Hollywood did perpetuate in the sort of early golden age, you know, with this sort of highbrow, very elitist, you know, white tie kind of version. Bugs Bunny didn't help in that way, actually, you know, although it was very, very funny and it was really, really good way of using it. But of course, you know, it was Bugs Bunny in a white tie and tails and kind of, you know, making that characterization. I think Hollywood did unfortunately perpetuate that to the masses. And so we've been having to fight that characterization of symphonic classical music as being this very off-putting and type of thing. But it's really anybody can enjoy it, and there's something for everybody.
And a quick, you know, just to touch on briefly, you said that your mother's family is from Ecuador. And what is it like kind of combining, you know, what I would call what people would associate kind of a white dominated space, you know, with different identities? You know, here in Eugene, that's definitely an interesting topic. Yeah. Because we're not as diverse of a city, although, you know, looking at when I was a kid to now, the other folks that are members of the Latinx community, we have such a big community that's so, you know, our experiences are so different. And, you know, how does that play into how you identify as a conductor, the work that you do?
That's a great question, and it's interesting. The easiest way I can answer that question is I do conduct in South America. I actually was just in Mexico 2 months ago. I was in Guadalajara doing a concert with the Filarmónica de Jalisco, and that is a world class orchestra and a world class hall, a world class venue. We were playing very standard classical music, symphonic music. That orchestra is very successful. The audiences are very knowledgeable there. The orchestra is made up purely of South Americans. I mean, maybe there are 10% non-Latino members, but everybody else is either Mexican or some form of South American. A lot of Venezuelans actually in that orchestra. They're trying to escape the country, unfortunately, but that's sort of that. That's one of the places they're landing. And so you have this. Also, I guess you consider that not a very diverse culture, because it's very Mexican or Latino, whatever you want to call it. But appreciating symphonic music that we appreciate here in exactly the same way. There's really no difference. They expect to hear Rachmaninoff and Tchaikovsky and Beethoven and Brahms. They're coming in droves. Our concert was sold out. They knew when to clap, when not to clap, all those rules that we talk about going to classical music. It was a very sophisticated audience, and it was in Mexico. And I find that almost everywhere I go, everywhere in South America that I go, even Brazil, where I work in Sao Paulo and Rio as well. I think what's interesting is that the what we offer as an art form, as an avenue for presenting art, is just that, is just the art. And we try to present it in a way that almost anybody can appreciate it. I think the big thing that orchestras here in this country are not doing well is inviting different communities to the parties, essentially. They're not really going out and making that invitation and saying, hey, there is something here for you too. And in a way that will make those communities feel welcome. It's one thing to just go ahead and say, hey, come, okay, fine. But if, for example, in Phoenix, where I am the music director, and of course there's a large Mexican population there because it's a border state, just even myself being able to go out into the community and just say, hey, I'm here, I'm conducting this orchestra, I'm Latino as well, and I love this music, and why I love this music, and why it speaks to me, I think is the most important thing that I think orchestras here can do, to invite more people into that experience and make it accessible to them.
Well, this has been absolutely fantastic. And speaking of that invitation to our communities, that's exactly what we're doing here with this interview. So for the performance coming up, our one night only on Thursday, can you tell us a little bit about what folks can expect to see?
Sure. So we're doing a concert. It's called The Red Violin, particularly because of one piece that we're doing on that concert. So the concert's going to have four pieces. We're going to do a symphony by Felix Mendelssohn, which is called the Italian Symphony. It was his fourth symphony. And Felix Mendelssohn is a German composer, was kind of considered another Mozart, later than Mozart, obviously. Mozart was a little earlier than Mendelssohn, but was considered to be the same kind of genius as Mozart was. And he writes this really wonderful and effervescent music. And the Italian Symphony is a very, very fiery work that has just a lot of sunshine and excitement and all the kinds of things you might associate Italy with. It was Mendelssohn, when he was young, he was a very fortunate kid. His parents were very wealthy, which is unlike most of the famous composers. Usually most of the famous composers were kind of in poverty, and they had a lot of trauma in their lives. And Mendelssohn had it all right. He was actually a pretty fortunate kid, and so fortunate enough that kids of his age, with his wealth, the parents would send them off into like a world tour, you know, when they're 18, go see the world, go experience things, then come back and start a family and do your thing. And so in his little world tour, he went to different places, and Italy was one of them. And this piece was written there and inspired by his experiences there. And so it's a really, really cool piece. One of my favorite classical music works. So that's the big piece. That's the thing that's going to end the concert. We're going to open with an arrangement of an organ piece by Dietrich Buxtehude, another German composer who Bach, who's a famous composer as well. Bach was an admirer of Buxtehude, was known to want to see him and study him, his organ playing. Buxtehude wrote this chaconne for the organ, and it was arranged for a full symphony orchestra by a Mexican composer, Carlos Chavez. And so that was done in the 20th century. So you have this work that was written in the late 1500s, arranged by a 20th century Mexican composer, very famous Mexican composer. So that's for full orchestra that opens the work. The second piece, the second two, the middle pieces are going to be solo violin pieces. And so we have a wonderful British violinist, Chloe Hanslip, who is arriving tomorrow, I think. She's flying in tomorrow. So she's really successful in Europe and has done a lot of really important dates here in the United States as well. She's going to be playing a piece called The Chaconne, just like the first piece. It's a musical form, but it's from a movie called The Red Violin, and it's a movie that won the Oscar for Best Score when it came out. I forget what year it came out, but the score was written by John Corigliano, who's a very, very famous American composer. And John Corigliano wrote essentially a violin score. He made a violin concerto, which is a huge 30-minute work, but this is a truncated version of that. It's just the chaconne from The Red Violin that she's going to play. So it's a really, really weird and interesting piece, very kind of gnarly rhythms and gnarly sounds and beautiful sounds too, but it's definitely an interesting work and not something you necessarily associate with a symphony orchestra. And then she'll play a more traditional work afterwards called The Havanais by Saint-Saëns, a French composer with a Cuban influence in his work. So it's a pretty big range of things, a potpourri of music. So we think there's something for everybody in this concert.
Well, I hope that our listeners definitely come out to see it. We're talking briefly about some of the faux pas that you can commit while going to the orchestra. I had never thought of this before, of appropriate moments to clap. Are there any suggestions you have for listeners about, you know, common courtesies we may not know before going?
Well, it's interesting. The funny thing about, like, I think any going to any concert of any genre is that I think any concert has their kind of rituals of what to do. You know, if you don't want to mosh pit, you probably don't want to go to a metal show, you know, if you don't want the risk of being hit by something, you know, that's that sort of thing. I think every type of music performance has its rituals or its sort of thing. Classical music and symphonic concerts are not so different in that way. The only real thing that I think people are always confused about is when to clap. I'm of the thinking that you clap whenever you feel like it. And I think most performers nowadays feel that way. It certainly was the case at the time of Mozart. Mozart expected people to clap whenever they heard something they liked. I mean, that's sort of what it was at the time. And over the years, that changed. And even Mendelssohn, who we're going to hear, wrote in a couple of his symphonies that the movements, the different sections of the symphonies, usually symphonies in four movements that sound like four individual pieces because they have a big ending. Usually they all have an ending and people want to clap. And even he wrote in some of his symphonies for the conductor to go on to the next movement quickly so that it would not people wouldn't applaud. There's definitely a controversy over this, even among musicians, over what those rules should be or what those rules are. But I think here in Eugene, I'm pretty sure that Francesco, who is the music director here, he certainly invites people to do what they feel. And I think in the end, we all want everybody to feel comfortable when they come. So no, I don't think there's really much. I think you'll kind of get the hang of it when you come, like any experience for the first time, and you'll sort of figure out what to do. I think most importantly is that you kind of come with an open mind classical music isn't something that you have to comprehend, quote unquote. It's not something you have to, if you can do a little homework about it, great, because it will enhance your listening, but it's also something that you can just sit back and enjoy it and let it take you wherever it takes you.
And if you're wondering, is this really for me? You know, you can YouTube some of these pieces, would be my guess, as well as, you know, if you're a fan of some of the MTV Unplugged work, they definitely take a lot of the more contemporary music and put it to these orchestra styles. And so if you're looking for some examples of that, you can also check out some of your MTV Unplugged CDs for kind of a preview. So thank you so much for coming and visiting us here at the station.
My
at
pleasure.
KLCC, Tito. And best of luck with your rehearsals all week, and wonderful, wonderful wishes for your performance on Thursday.
Thank you. Appreciate it very much.
Any last messages for our audience?
Please come. I think you're going to enjoy it. So it'll be a really great time. And the Holt Center is fantastic. That's the other thing I will say, is that Eugene has a world-class concert hall. That's one of the best concert halls I've ever been to. So please come.